Welcome back, folks, to episode 42 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and an adjunct professor at a local community college. And what we're going to do today, we're going to extend the conversation we had in episode 41 about constants never surprising and why the constants are so important, because often if we look at anything that's in current social media, anything in the news, and in what we would call general conversation, just the common colloquial speak, the way we talk to each other, and the way we speak to each other and discuss our challenges and those things that make it hard in a life, that are the things that are inconceivably unpredictable sometimes, things that are out of our control and that can be frustrating to us, we tend to focus a lot on change. Change is the constant. Endless variation, never surprised, was the, in quotes, principle that I put up in the last podcast. But the extension of the conversation goes today in the direction of constants. Even though constants never surprise, those are the things that we least pay attention to when we discuss those things that impact our lives. We discuss the change, things that are changing, those things that are impermanent, those things that are no longer what they used to be, those things that we know that will evolve and change into things that they're going to be and no longer be what they are today or were yesterday. And there is this sense of hearkening sometimes whenever we look back to the way things were, and almost a sense of loss when we realize that maybe they're never going to be, they will never be the same again. And that can even become a sad thing whenever it's something we relate to. And as far as relationships, people, how people change, and how they're impacted by environment. But as a principle, those things that we know that we can count on are the immutable, the unchangeables. Now, immutable would be an absolute, but for our conversation today, it is probably a fair term to be using, because there are things that we know that regardless of how much has changed, there are many things that don't. And if those give us a point of reference, or even some sort of foundation for our ability to make sense of things, then it can even give us a sense of temporal reference, time, how long does this last, how long does this go on, versus what is happening in the change and why has the change only lasted so long, but in comparison to a constant, wow, that's just a drop in the bucket versus something that, if it is a constant, unlike an ocean, it's always moving, but seeing it as a mass or a whole, that's kind of big. It's kind of beyond my ability to understand sometimes. So keeping an idea along the lines of a constant in mind, whenever we're focused on change, gives us a sense of not only reference, but gives us a point of balance. And we are discussing self-regulatory skills. And when we discuss people and our feelings and our thoughts, how we interact with environment, how our environment impacts us, then we know that there are a lot of things that are elements that are transient, that come in and out of our lives, they come to us and move away from us, and they impact us at times that sometimes we don't expect. Sometimes these are repetitive impacts in the sense that we run into things on a regular basis. Maybe I go and pick up a friend and drop them off at work every 6 o'clock in the morning so we can be there by 8, this sort of thing. And that becomes a relative constant, but it's still a very transient thing that can be impacted by change. Someone could be sick, car could break down, someone could change jobs and no longer need that ride. So there are a number of things that can happen. So we call these relative constants, relative to my life and relative to what's going on. And then we're looking at the larger overarching constant, those things that don't change. So to give this some flesh and a bit of visual, we'll think about what is a constant. And I'll start with a little Zen thing that my teacher taught me many years ago in martial arts when I asked him how old he was. And it was rather comical. And at the same time, it made the point pretty cleanly. And he said, well, as compared to a blade of grass, I am very old. As compared to a mountain, I'm very young. You see the two reference points in nature, one that is even more transient than the life of a human, generally, and also one that is much less transient. Mountains do grow and fall, but not in anything that we could call a fathomable human experience that we could say, oh, we saw it rise and we saw it grow, we saw it fall and back to flatness in the earth. We have only got what geologists tell us have happened, but we have not seen it occur in front of our eyes. Now, whenever we're looking at these points of reference, let's think about life in general. Whenever we're experiencing day-to-day stress, when we're experiencing day-to-day fun, or just a relationship that may run 30 years, and know that there is this sense of start and stop whenever people get together and whenever the relationship may go away. But all the stuff in the middle, all the in-between events that we call part of, in quotes, the life, a life that is lived, that could be breathing, could be eating on a very fundamental sense. It could be where I work, friends that I have, helping people do things, maybe going fishing, go on vacation. Those are all high points and events. If we were to look at life linearly, that we could say that came and went. But whenever we lump it together as life, my life, having been lived, it tends to take on this new pattern. It's a narrative of sorts with lots of visual, lots of emotional, and lots of events and actions that had been taken, now memory, some recorded, some not, and some even forgotten for that matter. But these kind of details give us a sense of what are details that are transient, events that are transient in our lives, relationships that may come and go, jobs that may come and go, maybe even illnesses and injuries that have come and went through our life. And why is this so important to self-regulatory skill? Well, two things that are really important to this understanding and how we can use this to self-regulate and to minimize stress and mitigate issues that would become problematic involving how I interpret stress. But one is lens. And what lens is this? Temporal lens. How am I seeing this? Am I looking at it from a very myopic, very close to my life and egocentric, this is me and that's all that there is focus on, wherever how my life is working out, things that are impacting and moving to and through my life. And then we have the other lens, and that is the long view. This is the one that is more like the third person perspective versus the first person perspective, and the third person outside observer, literally looking from the outside in without any emotional content or involvement, but yet still being able to observe everything as a whole. So we have these two perspectives and points. And often we get stuck somewhere in between when we discuss those things that would be a constant or something that is constantly in flux or change. And those two lenses are very important to be able to identify. Well, is this something that I can control? Is this something I can change about what I do? Or is this something that regardless of what I do is going to stay the same? Often that it would be our constant or our immutable, unchangeable, I can't control this type of thing. Whereas the more temporal, immediate, egoistic lens that impacts me, time becomes much more important. That becomes, it seems like time moves faster or slower than we'd like it to. Can't control time, of course. But we have this sense of when we're doing things that we enjoy, time just flies by. Things that become very uncomfortable or boring, seems like time drags on, like when we're children. And that time dilation or time constriction fact is a perception based on comfort and also how we're interacting with an action or our world for that matter. So for our purposes today, the understanding that how we look at things certainly impacts what it is that would be the constant that never changes in our lives. That means that we can't really change it, for instance, but yet we have feelings and emotions about it. And also those inconstant things, those things that are transient and changing. And that is also described by the constants. Never surprise, but the constant, the only constant in the truest sense is that in the life of a person is that change occurs at all level of life, whether it be in the environment we live, the earth itself, it changes, yes, but also in the individual interpersonal and the intrapersonal within myself, there's always something that's in flux or changing, and that's an adaptability of sorts. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to lift a little bit of terminology from evolution. And there was this one evolutionist, his name was Van Halen, like the music group. I love the fact that he was named that, it just makes it more exciting. Kind of like Van Halen's music, but that's not what we're discussing today. But the evolutionary biologist's name was Leigh Van Halen. And he came up with an idea that was so counter what the typical idea was having to do with evolution, that for a long time they didn't like what he had to say. Now, one of the things that he posited was that in evolution, that there are some species that are more dominant, of course. Even Darwin said things like this within an environment. But Van Halen, what he was talking about was what we'd call a time horizon, that is a really current term right now, that has to do with, like, over a long enough time horizon, a long enough time, we start seeing that advantage or superiority or dominance flatten out, in the sense that even those species that don't last as long, and they call these groups of species taxons, different types of species that are being measured, that are being looked at throughout the natural world, that there are some that are exceedingly powerful within a short period of time, and then they succumb. One example given was the black rhino that was incredibly dominant for many, many thousands, if not millions of years. But yet, whenever we developed really superior hunting methods using high-power rifles, they ran into human beings that were able to hunt them to extinction. So even within that case, one could say, well, that wasn't natural. Well, no, it wasn't natural in the sense that it occurred within the natural world in and of itself, but as a result of our ability to have superior technology, we were able to inject a change for which this animal could not affect an adaptive response that allowed it to survive as a result of the superiority of the technology we had. It was something that it was not able to accommodate or change as a result of being in interaction with it, but yet being unable to defend against it or resist it somehow. So we killed it to the point of extinction. And that, in the bigger sense, could be considered a very perfect example of being adaptable and dominant. But over a long enough horizon, at some point, we will run into something that will, if not extirpate us, that would be run us out of the area that we tend to be dominant in. It will exterminate us to the point of extinction, which we did with the dodos, for that matter. So why is this important in self-regulation? Sometimes we have to look at the fact that there are things that we do that no longer serve us, things that are adaptions, sometimes even things that are maladapted that we think that are helping us. And I'm going to draw on what I know about addiction treatment is the fact that many of the behaviors that have to do with pursuit of pleasure or using the hedonic senses to pursue pleasure and stop pain, or maybe even numb ourselves from having negative pains, at some point that becomes so frequent that it becomes toxic. When at first, if you were to say that if somebody did that once and it felt good, then it helped them, it stopped them from hurting, then that makes sense from the hedonic principle perspective, in that we're cutting down on those things that are negative and feel bad, because if you do enough chronic negative, you're going to get ill, you're not going to feel good. But yet, at some point, you cross that barrier of what we would call useful, to the point where it becomes a dependence, a crutch. And then it becomes an addiction we can't control, to where someone may be going out and they have their baby with them, and then while they're driving, they pass their place where they usually go and get their drugs, and they can't help it because the drive is so physiologically intense, and then they're out at the door and they're buying drugs or whatever, and they can still see their baby there, but they leave the baby in the car, but they don't want them inside where they're dealing with the illicit substances, but yet they can't help themselves, even though the priority of that baby's safety, for instance, one would think, from a reasonable person's perspective, would supersede any need to go and get drugs. But yet, the drive, that craving, is so deep and is so hard, it can't be denied. It is no longer a reasonable, rational thing. This is now survival level adaption mode going on. And whenever we think about survival level, then we're talking about some things that are some very dark drives that do not necessarily follow along the guidelines or the laws or rules that we have to treat each other better and to make sure that we are providing the best care or allowing ourselves to do the best behavior that'll be safest for all involved, especially if the all involved are babies that rely on us, for instance, for their safety. Whenever we have that survival level drive going on because we're in fight flight, for instance, to harken back to some of the earlier podcasts, and we realize that these drives will supersede the best of our higher cognitive thinking. And if we're under the right kind of stress, blood flow leaves the front part of our brain, and then our IQ drops. Now we're dealing more with the perceptual and the impulsive part of our lower level of brain. And those are the things that are along the lines of the instinctive that we speak of when we're in the fight flight out in nature, for instance. And we have to realize that whenever constants never change, this is one inconstant thing within us that feels like a constant in the negative sense, in that we have a constant desire or drive to seek to alleviate the discomfort that could be a withdrawal effect. And it is no longer about getting the good feels, but rather stopping the pain. And the pain, if there is none of the drug involved in the body whenever one has addicted, is the constant. Pain is the constant. The chronicity of that pain will compromise the best of our best reasoning, and even with the best of our best resistance and will, we won't be able to overcome that, and it's a very sad thing. So why am I mentioning this for self-regulation? Here's why. Self-regulation often involves having to do and deal with those things that we have conscious control over and would like to choose better through, especially when a situation that's uncomfortable. Whenever you deal with a situation that's not social, but rather it's a deep intrapsychic, intraphysiological, biological stress, addiction, and withdrawal. It doesn't always have to be drugs. It can be other things too. That is whenever our reason goes out the window and the constant becomes the pain. Or rather, the pain becomes a constant, more correctly. But that is the pain. It's no longer the environment outside, but my internal environment that drives me. And the strongest, most proximal suggestion comes from within my mind, yes, but also the strongest, most physiological need, drive, and suggestion is that I'm in pain. If I don't get this, I'm going to hurt, and I'll stop this at any cost. No cost is too high. You see what I'm saying there? You see that I'd be willing to cross any line to stop the discomfort within me, especially if I know that if I don't, it's going to come back, it's going to be there, it's going to get worse. This is where we start seeing people crossing over into self-injury, suicidality, homicidality, because the pain becomes so great. So we have to understand that as a self-regulatory skill, understanding those things that are constant, is pain my constant, is a good question. The constant is the mountain outside of me. The constant is the pain or that withdrawal within me if there's addiction. And what about regular stuff? What is my constant? Am I the constant? Can I be the constant? In a smaller sense, in the lens of the egoistic, individually interacting with other people, can I be a constant? Well, what are you doing in a sense regularly that you're a constant and you don't waver? Maybe it's your self-discipline. Maybe it's your eating well. Maybe it's your working out. Maybe it's your showing up at work. Maybe it's being the person that is always there whenever other people are calling in sick, or maybe not wanting to be there, or maybe they don't show up. Maybe the constant is being a person of your word, being straightforward, being upright, honest. And sometimes the constant is the one that may have to stand up and do the work when no one else will. And it doesn't have to be an adversarial thing. Sometimes it can be a very self-disciplined thing. What am I doing that is a constant in my life? I choose to do these things to better myself, for instance. My constants can be healthy behaviors. My constants can be eating well, sleeping well, working well. And maybe I don't have all my constants in order, but maybe I add one thing that will become a constant in my life that will transform how I do things. Maybe I will start eating better. Maybe I will start walking a little more every day. Even if it's 10 minutes a day, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a mile a week. It can just be 10 minutes at a time, just to aid digestion after eating, or just to get some fresh air. But movement is king. The movement in the body is one of the constants that maybe we should all add to our lives. Not because I say so, it's just because science indicates that if we move, then we're more apt to alleviate disease or the onset of disease. Those are good things. Tai Chi is a good way to do that. Walking is a good way to do that. And meditation in motion is really kind of cool if you're doing a walking meditative type thing. But the idea is to add something that's not only useful, but helpful and health engendering, and add new constants to yourself at your level of life, knowing that there are some things that are constants that are outside of my ability to change, like the rock or the mountain. There are things that we can change, that we can add over a long period of time that are salutary. They will add health benefit to you. And part of the reason I wanted to add this, and I went the route of the addiction too, is that not all things that we add to our life are of the greatest benefit to us. But there are a lot of things that do greatly benefit us, even if it's one step at a time, one inch at a time, a little bit at a time, one breath at a time. It adds up. And be willing to add those things a little at a time. And the greatest thing we can do for ourselves in loving ourselves is to allow ourselves the opportunity to engender health, happiness, and the wealth that is health to our lives, and also being generous with self as well as others. And don't be afraid of being kind and generous to yourself, because we can only give from that we have. And if we're vacuous and empty on the inside, how can we expect to love and care for someone else? And we have to love ourselves enough and even be willing to say, you know what, I'm really not liking this, and loving yourself for not liking that, and that's okay too. We have to be gentle in our way with ourselves so we can become more resilient over time. We don't want to damage ourselves into this callous mass, thinking we somehow gained strength, when in actuality we just armored ourselves up and taught ourselves just to shell up versus being flexible in response and more adaptable long term, and therefore becoming more constant in a life, so to speak. So that's really what I wanted to discuss today. And I know it sounded kind of like a broad topic, but really is just part two of what episode 41 was covering, and also just some ideas that can help us flex what self-regulatory skills can be. And we'll be adding some more here soon, but I think it was just an important thing to add, you know, a discussion on what is a constant versus always focusing on change. Because the change, yeah, we know that's an immutable. We know that change is always with us and always will be. But it's good to know where the things are that never do. Because the constants never surprise. And endless variation never surprise means change shouldn't surprise you. But if you have constants, that's what gives you foundation. And in a sense, gives you some reference to what is changeable, what isn't, and kind of takes the fear out of the change, and we realize that there are things that will be here a long time after we're gone and have been here before ever we were here. So it gives us perspective once again. And hopefully it'll give you courage and a sense of looking at things from a different lens, and know that that lens can be adjusted. It's not always from the right now. And we can see things from, of course, the second person, the compassionate, walking in someone else's shoes perspective. But the third person perspective is intelligent in the sense that it allows us to look at things without opinion and really, really get a sense for what things really are without my opinion, without my ego inflecting what I would like. So that way we can see more clearly and gather more information more effectively, so we can improve our self-efficacy as a human being. That means become more efficient and effective in those things that I do for myself in my life, or even our simple daily living skills. So with that, I want to say thank you for spending some time this evening with me. This is the day after Thanksgiving, and I'm going to go and have some dinner with my family and the lovely new granddaughter. That's going to be really fun. I just want to tell you all thank you for sharing your time with me. And if you'd like to share this podcast, please do. I would greatly appreciate that. And if you know somebody that can benefit from it, please give it to them. And even to those people that you think might not benefit, give it to them anyway. I would greatly appreciate that. And tell them, hey, Armando said so. But on top of that, I hope you have great holidays. And if you're overseas not celebrating this holiday, I hope you have a really good day. And thank you for your time once again. I appreciate you. Appreciate your listening. And I certainly hope to be talking to you all soon. If you have any comments or feedback, send them to the email at runningmangetskillsproject@gmail.com. And with that, I want to say thanks again. Can't tell you thanks enough. And walk well.